through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Tom, Jake, and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Ross.
Hour number two of Tom, Jake, and Stacy. You know, I was home, I was back in Connecticut over Christmas break, and a lot of my friends back there, a handful of them, are Met fans. And I happened to be asking one of them, his name is Jason, I was like, yeah, Jason, how about those Mets? You know, just talking, just trying to get into conversation. He goes, I don't understand what they're doing. They trade for Diaz, and now I get to watch Kelnick rake for the Mariners for the next 10 years. Ooh. And he got all upset about it. I said, yeah, that's pretty much what it is. And so we welcome into the show now Jared Kelnick of, well, not yet of the Seattle Mariners, but Jared, how are you doing?
Good. How are we doing, guys?
Pretty good, man. What have you been up to this offseason so far?
You know, I've been enjoying some family time. And spent a lot of time with my girlfriend, her family as well. But really getting after it on the baseball side. Focused a lot on hitting off-speed stuff. That was really what I was focusing on. Getting really strong in the weight room, but staying flexible. That was the biggest thing.
Jared, congratulations. You're heading into your first major league camp. What are your expectations for that experience that you're about to gain?
You know, my expectations are to try to be the best guy in camp. You know, my expectations have always been higher than everyone else's. And I think being one of the younger guys with kind of a spotlight on me, there's going to be what people think, there's going to be some pressure. But when you have your expectations higher than everyone else's, there's no such thing as pressure because, you know, when you have your expectations so high, you just try to fulfill. You're already fulfilling everybody else's, but you just got to meet yours.
Hey, Jared, give us a bit of insight into some of the friendships that maybe you're developing with other young prospects there. Who do you hang out with? Who do you talk to? You know, how are those relationships developing? We're so curious.
Yeah, I mean, Julio's my guy. I think everybody can see that through social media, but really, social media doesn't do justice. I actually, 2 days ago, I was over, his mom was in town, and she made him and I lunch, and like we sat down for like 2 hours and just talked, and we hang out every now and then. But like Julio's definitely in this organization. He's my ride or die. He's really been with me every step of the way since I've came to the Mariners. But it's really developing. I mean, guys like Evan White, Justin Dunn, the guys in Sheffield, the guys that I played with in Double A, I've already had relationships with. I think they're something that's really unique about this group. We're a young group of guys in a big league clubhouse, and it's really becoming like a family environment right away. Like you have Timmy Lopes, Jake Fraley, Eric Swanson. Like there's a lot of guys that you're developing relationships with.
Do you and Julio have a secret handshake? I mean, because you tell me you're right or die, I have to think. Not yet. Well, I guess that's why you're out there together.
No, because we would if we played with each other long enough. Because he got hurt and then I left. And so I didn't play with him. I only played with him for probably like a week and a half the whole season. But I have handshakes with everybody else, just not him.
You have some time to figure it out.
Once I play with him more, absolutely.
Talking to Jared Kelnick here on the Zeke's Pizza Hotline. We were talking in our last segment, Jared, about chick flicks or rom-coms, as they're known these days. Are you a big fan of those?
Absolutely.
What's your favorite?
My girlfriend makes fun of me for it all the time.
What's your favorite one?
The Best of Me. That's always a go-to.
The Best of Me?
I got to Google this. I think I've seen it before.
Who's in The Best of
Me? It's a book. It's a book.
Oh, it's a book.
No, it's a book. It is a book, too. Here, I'm going to look it up right now, actually.
Let's all look this up together. Oh, you know what I was thinking this was? I was thinking The Longest Ride.
Oh, I've seen that, though.
I'm not going to lie, you guys.
Miley Cyrus.
Yeah, that's a good one, and I cried.
If you've seen this one will make you cry because I've cried. But not really anybody, like, big besides, isn't it James? Marsden or something.
Yeah, they're always like lesser known. Yeah, James Marsden. Oh, I like him. Now it's just me and Jared talking about chicken. And then have you seen?
No, it's a real. It's a really sad. It's like really sad, but it's also really, really moving.
Guys, I'm going to watch this.
I love it, Jared. And it's funny because I love the confidence that you provide. Where is that developed, honestly? Because it's easy to have false bravado. I see it all the time in the football realm. That's where I came from. And guys have false bravado in themselves, and they try and portray confidence. But it seems like, you know, for you, this confidence in yourself is genuine. Where does that come from? Where did you develop that?
You know, I think it really stems down to my parents. I think you sit down and you talk to my dad, for one, extremely confident guy. It's like a genuine confidence, I would say, like you had mentioned. But, you know, I put in the work. I truly feel that I work harder than anybody out there. And that gives me the confidence to, when I go out onto the field, just let my hard work pay off. And that's the easy part. It's something I really take pride in, of how hard I work, because I enjoy it. I enjoy getting after in the weight room. I enjoy trying to be the best I can be at anything, whether it is being a baseball player, whether it's being a son, a friend, a boyfriend, whatever it is. I enjoy trying to be the best in every aspect. You know, there's obviously things that I struggle at, and part of life is just learning with it, just like it is in baseball. But, you know, for me, on the baseball side, every year, like, there's things that I've learned that I struggled with last year that I'm implementing into the off season that I did this year, just so I don't have those weaknesses going into this season. And it's just a learning process, you know? Baseball is a lot like life.
So we hear. We're talking to Jared Kelnick here. Jared, where did you get the idea to be hitting frisbees with a baseball off a tee?
Oh, you like that?
Yeah, of course. We all loved it.
So I was actually going pheasant hunting that day. And I that afternoon. And so I told my hitting coach, I was like, we got to hit early today because I'm going pheasant hunting with my dad. It was the day before I left to come to Arizona. And he was like, all right, yeah, sounds good. So then we were hitting, just getting loose off the tee, and there was a frisbee. And my hitting coach was like, man, she was thinking of like clay pigeons. And he's like, what if I threw it and you hit it with the ball? And I was like, like, challenge accepted, you know?
Yeah.
So he threw it. It took me 8 tries. It literally took me about 20 minutes to do. You know, the hardest part was you had to watch him throw it, see how the frisbee was flying, and take your eye off the frisbee so you could hit the ball and guess where the frisbee was going to end up.
Does that actually help you in any way, or was that just for fun?
Oh, that was just for fun.
All right.
I don't think that's
real. You don't know they do that at batting practice, Tom?
Well, I don't know. I mean, maybe there's some practical application. Who knows?
Scott Service is like, yeah, we went with frisbees this year. I can't believe it only took you 8 tries. I was gonna. Yeah. I wasn't expecting you to say how many tries, so I was prepared to ask you, be honest, how many.
Tell you what, if I get to the big leagues this year and have a good season in the big leagues, I'll be the first one to tell you that it was because I hit the frisbee.
You should. You should absolutely go with that. Hey, I have a question about that, actually. So when you envision yourself in the big leagues, do you see yourself as strictly a center fielder or like a corner outfielder? How do you see yourself?
You know, I see myself as a center fielder. I'm quick, and I have really good reads, I believe. At the same time, if I need to slide over, I'm not afraid to, and I have the confidence and the ability to. One thing that helps me is I feel like I have a really good arm, so I can play in right. But for me, if you had to ask me, like, I'm a center fielder. That's where I'm most comfortable. And I really enjoy being out there and taking the lead and covering the most ground and making plays.
Jared, walk us through kind of last year, because it was such a whirlwind for you, right? You go from the Mets, you're traded to the Mariners, then, you know, you play at a great rate, but you're kind of fast-tracked. You're in West Virginia, Modesto, then finish in Arkansas. Kind of go through, you know, tell us what that experience was like for you. What did you learn? What were some of the challenges of that experience from last year?
Well, the biggest thing that I learned is to only pack for about 2 weeks. That was that was the first thing because, you know, you literally, it, like, people don't understand. Like, you get called up, you are gone on a plane the next morning. It's not you hang out for a little bit and then you are literally gone. And so when the story that I always tell every time is when I got called up from high to double A, because it's a crazy story. So I was away in San Jose, which is about roughly 2.5 hours out of Modesto. And my parents, or my dad and my brother, were flying down to come and watch my game that night. And I met them for lunch, and my mom was going to come in late that night. So I had lunch with my dad and my brother, and I went to the field, did my, like, shindig where we hit BP, all that stuff. And 7:10 game starts, and I struck out my first at bat, believe it or not. And I went out to the outfield, and it was like the third inning, and I came back in, and I had a card in my back pocket that I positioned my outfielders. And my coach goes, "Hey, give me your card." And I was like, "What?" And I'm thinking I got in trouble because I struck out. And he's like, "No, give me your card. Like, you're done." I was like, "What? Okay, here." So I gave him my card, and I was, like, panicking because my dad was here. My brother was in the stands. My mom's literally in the air on her way, and he comes up to me and goes, "You're going to double A. Go pack up your locker." So now, and that's not where the story ends. So I literally had to flag my dad down from the stands. We packed up my locker. I then drove all the way to Modesto, cleaned out my locker in our home clubhouse, went to my host family's house, cleaned out my room there, then drove all the way back to San Jose where my mom was now at the hotel with my brother. I got back at 2 a.m. and my flight left at 6:15 in the morning, and I played that night.
Oh my goodness.
That's in Springfield.
Wait a minute. They make you drive all the way back to your home locker to clean that out? They don't clean that out? They don't help you out with that?
No, because it was so short notice I had to do it. They would if I got called up, like, after a game, well, then the clubby would help me.
Okay.
But because I was on the road, my clubby wasn't there at home.
Gosh.
That is crazy.
Yeah, so then
that's a whirlwind, man.
Yeah, and so then I just remember I showed up to Springfield, first double-A game, somebody yells my name, and I'm just like, stop. I'm tired.
Wow, that is a the lives that you guys live as minor leaguers, that's just unbelievable. Jared Kelnick, it's been a pleasure to speak with you, man. We wish you the best of luck this spring.
Yeah, no, thank you so much. It was a lot of fun.
All right, man, take care. On the Zeke's Pizza Hotline, that's Jared Kelnick. Right now, we are in four down territory.
This is four down territory.
With Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
We live for moments like this. Time for us to step up and take it.
Regarding Greg Olsen, Jake, what's a free agent visit like in the NFL?
Yeah, Greg Olsen reportedly is in town today with the Seahawks, and it's interesting to go through this process because it's like everybody thinks of maybe it's like a college recruiting trip. You know,
a college tour, like, yeah, they're touring him around campus, and this is Old Main.
That's right. Here's the history of we have of
we
this.
Call this the quad.
Right, and here's this one rock, and this is part of our university for forever. No, with them, I mean, there's stories of, you know, obviously players coming flying down on private planes and on, what do they call those? The jets that come down onto the water,
seaplanes.
Yeah, you know, they
knew we were getting.
I almost got hit by one of those.
Add a little flair if you're the Seahawks, you know. I think that might be one of the experiences. But ultimately, I think for Greg Olsen, he's a vet at this point at 35 years old. He doesn't need the extra special wine and dine and, you know, all these conversations. It's really getting to, you know, the thick of the conversation, which is, all right, how much money do you guys want to offer me? What is the offense? What does it look like? What would be the plan for me implementing me in this offense? And then having that conversation with Pete Carroll, John Schneider, and probably Brian Schottenheimer along with it. So it's really just going and getting a feel for what the organization's like, what the coaches are like, and what are their plan. Because for Greg Olsen, the interesting part about this is we look at these three teams, and the other part that we don't take into account sometimes is that Greg Olsen has a future in color commentary waiting for him when he retires. So if he doesn't get a deal that he likes or a situation that he feels comfortable with, then he's probably in a position where he can say, you know what, it's been a good run. I've got this next phase of the journey, you know, waiting for me. that I'm excited about. So it's going to be interesting to see what his final decision is at the end of the week. But if it's between those three teams, the Washington Redskins, Buffalo Bills, and the Seahawks, I have to assume that he's going to want to play with Russell Wilson and the Seahawks.
Never mind the wine and dine. How much are you going to pay me?
Exactly.
Second down. Stace?
Tom?
You kind of had a little connection there with Kelnick, didn't you?
I feel like we really connected on rom-coms.
But like he wasn't like the traditional rom-com, like How to Lose a Guy in 10
no,
Days.
No, he was going
well,
deep
first
cuts.
Of all,
deep.
That's a great movie, but he
yes,
also got into the level of movies where I'm like, what's this? You look at the cover of it on like Amazon, and you're like, let's check it out. And then you're sobbing like an hour later. And I also like that he was very open about crying. My sister has made fun of me and my mom multiple times for how much we cry.
Really?
Movies.
Oh, at movies?
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Stacey, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
How's the rest of the NFC West looking as far as cap space goes?
I'll tell you what. The Seahawks have, and this is the best news that you can hear about it, the most cap room in the NFC West. Now, normally you would have a ton of cap room, like letting guys go or having a ton of cheap guys. So they really have freed up a lot. All of those roster moves they've made, those tough decisions they've made over the last 2 years have left them with almost $60 million in cap space. And keep in mind, this is good because, like Jake mentioned yesterday, their biggest position of need is the second most expensive position to pay for in the NFL, and you probably want two edge rushers. So that's going to take up a lot of your cap, but you also have to use it on draft picks if you draft higher. So there's a lot of stuff that goes into that. They're in a good spot for that this year. The Cardinals are next with $51 million. They also draft before the Seahawks. The 49ers have the least with $19.2 million. The Rams are in there with $23 million, although they don't have a first-round pick this year. And do they have one next year?
They don't have one next year.
Yeah, so they are out of luck as far as the draft goes. So the Seahawks, like the cumulative kind of situation they're in as far as their draft capital and their cap space, I think is the best in the NFC West.
Third down. Colorado's Mel Tucker became the third Pac-12 coach to leave since the season ended. Why do coaches keep leaving this conference? Why are they abandoning me?
The Pac-12, I've heard this a couple different times, and people are all over Larry Scott for this. And I think that, you know, sometimes we over-dramatize the situation because here's the thing. Chris Peterson, he left because of the college, the grind of the college football recruiting, what it is to be a head coach in college football these days. But you look at Mike Leach. Mike Leach was always kind of looking for the next situation. It wasn't. I don't think Mike Leach looked at WSU as his permanent home.
Is this a stepping stone conference?
It could be. It's turning out to be that way.
Yeah, when you bring in schools like Utah and Colorado, and you've already got places like Washington State, it's kind of what it is.
Well, and you also look at it and say Colorado, Mel Tucker turns down Michigan State. And then they come back with a even bigger offer the second time around. It just goes to show that the conference's power, the booster power of the Big Ten is bigger than the Pac-12. And I think that the Pac-12, again, it's a reminder of this conference that they are behind from everyone else around the country from a TV deal, from the strength of the conference itself. There's a lot of things to be, you know, nervous about if you're the Pac-12, and a lot of things need to change and they need to bolster as they're moving forward if they really want to compete at a national level like they think they do.
Fourth down. Should Mike Holmgren be in the Hall of Fame?
To me, I was thinking about this more and more, and this has kind of been a little bit of a debate on this show that we've had, but to me, without question, Mike Holmgren is a Hall of Fame coach. I think that he really is. When you look at it, the fact that he went to the Green Bay Packers, and this wasn't a Green Bay Packers organization that he got and he was just handed this gem of a situation. It was a dump at the point when he took over the Green Bay Packers. He turned it into a winning franchise again. He took Brett Favre, a gunslinger who was kind of a wild child, and made him into a Hall of Fame quarterback operating within the system as much as Brett Favre could possibly operate within a system. Then he goes and inherits a Seattle Seahawks organization that, once again, is not one of the marquee organizations in the NFL, turns it into a winning franchise, takes them to a Super Bowl, robbed of a Super Bowl in that one. And I think his coaching tree, you look at his coaching tree, and there are great ripple effects from his coaching and guys that went on to be head coaches in this league because of Mike Holmgren and the experiences they had. He is a Hall of Fame coach without question in my mind.
I think if you're putting guys like Bill Cowher in there, not that I have anything against Bill Cowher, I feel like standards are being lowered too much, but if Cowher's going in, a guy like Holmgren probably goes in too. Those guys coached in the same era. They won about the same amount, and they both went to one. Actually, no, I'm sorry. Holmgren went to three. He won one. Right? He beat the Patriots, lost to the Broncos, and then
yes,
lost to the Steelers. So one and two went to three. See, here's the thing. With Marv Levy, we give guys credit for just getting to four straight Super Bowls, even though he lost them all. But with guys like Cowher and Holmgren, we take it away from them, the fact that they only won one, but they lost two.
Right.
It's kind of strange.
It is hard
to get to four Super Bowls.
I agree.
It's a unique situation.
But what's
right?
better, 1-2 or 0-4?
That's a great question. The amount
of
success.
Like, is it harder to is getting to a Super Bowl in itself equal to however many wins in your mind?
Yes,
I don't know.
Exactly.
I mean, getting to four straight. I mean, it's not just four over his career. Four straight. To me, that's insane. That is an unbelievable thing. And plus, they were kind of revolutionary in terms of their offense that they ran during that time. Their spread, no huddle, up tempo offense that was unique in that day and age.
One thing that helped the Bills in that era, but while we're going off on this tangent. Free agency, I don't think, came in until about 1993.
Four,
okay, even better. The Bills, at that point, were the only legitimate AFC threat to the NFC because the NFC had the teams with all the money. So that's probably why they got there four times in a row. They were able to assemble that special team and keep all those guys basically for 4 years in a row. They didn't really lose anybody. They had all those special players, Andre Reed, Thurman Thomas, Jim Kelly, Daryl Talley, Bruce Smith, all those guys, Hall of Famers, all over the roster. They managed to hold on to all of them because there was no such thing as a salary cap and there was no such thing as free agency yet. So do we credit Marv Levy then for that, or do we say... you know what, he benefited because of the system that was in place?
Well, he might have benefited, but everybody else was having the same benefit at that time.
Yeah.
Right?
So, I
wouldn't knock a guy
compared
for
to his peers, he still far exceeded
right.
those expectations.
Right. Everybody else had the same advantage that he did. So I wouldn't say that he had something over the rest. But in terms of Bill Cowher, not taking anything away from Bill Cowher, but I'm just curious because he had great success with one franchise, right? I'm just looking at it and from a objective point of view, I think Mike Holmgren's accomplishments and what he did is, to me, I'm surprised Mike Holmgren hasn't gotten to the Hall of Fame before Bill Cowher. Like, if you're talking about those two guys, I'm just a little surprised that Holmgren is coming after Cowher because of his success with two different organizations and, you know, the tentacles that he has in terms of his offensive philosophy coaching tree in the league. I don't know if Bill Cowher has that same type of ripple effect across the NFL.
Did he get fired from Green Bay or did he walk?
He walked.
His contract expired.
Okay.
Yes, he
Seahawks
walked.
Seahawks recruited him. It was a big deal. They brought him in here on a free agent trip. I remember that.
The only black mark for Mike Holmgren in his NFL pedigree was his failed attempt of trying to, you know, rejuvenate the Cleveland Browns as their vice president or whatever
role
he had.
Oh, that's right. I forgot he went there a few years ago.
Yeah, he was there for a couple years, a year.
In Cleveland?
Yeah.
Yeah, that wasn't pretty.
It wasn't a good thing. It wasn't a good
situation. But who succeeded
situation to be an upper management?
Recently,
I'm just saying,
recently.
Yes, nobody. But I'm just saying that's the only black mark, but it's not something that would make him lesser than Bill Cowher in my mind.
I want to react to a couple of things that Jared Kelnick said in our interview with him. Plus, we have legitimate rule changes in baseball coming at you in the Halftime Show next. 710 ESPN Seattle.
It's time for the Halftime Show.
The half is not over. There's 3 seconds on the clock.
Revisiting the biggest stories of today at the midpoint of the show.
The Halftime Show. It's not easy.
Now, here's Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Hey, Stacey, how are your reading skills?
They're great. I excel at reading. It was my highest score on the Wassel.
I'm sorry?
The Wassel?
That's
your last name.
Did you
it's
know
the
there
Washington
was a...
State standardized test that they used to do. I don't know if they do it anymore.
Washington Assessment of Student Learning.
Yeah.
Did you know that you had a test named after you?
I'm honored.
It's W-A-S-L.
Yeah, it was the
W-A-S-L.
Yeah, the worst couple weeks ever.
Yeah, you had to spend like your entire day at school taking this
test. It was great.
For two days?
It was like 2 or 3 days.
Three days, I think.
Yeah, I don't love standardized testing, but not to brag.
I'm pretty sure you loved it.
Reading.
You probably came in.
Math is another story.
This was your game day.
This was my flu game.
We used to take something called the California Achievement Test, but we were in Connecticut. If that makes sense.
What?
No, it doesn't, actually. It does not make sense.
But it doesn't make any sense that you guys would take a test that's named after me either.
It wasn't named after you.
Sure was.
Okay.
That's what they told me anyway. Cap casualties, guys.
Uh-huh.
Somebody's got to go.
Yeah.
KJ Wright, Justin Britt, DJ Fluker, Ed Dixon, Bradley McDougald. At the top of the show, we went through and we played a little game of Keep or Cut. Now, here's what I wanted to ask you guys after we did that, though. Do we always have to give the disclaimer as media that we like these guys and that we don't want them shipped out of town?
I think if they are, I mean, Jake knows a lot of these guys personally.
Yes.
I've interviewed a lot of these guys, so I don't know them on that same personal level, but in two different relationships, I think it's hard not to give that premise for certain players when you're like, oh, this guy always does an interview and this guy is always so professional and nice.
Well,
it's hard
Wright,
not to add it.
KJ Wright is like a lifetime Seahawk, right? He's a Seahawk among Seahawks. And Dixon isn't. Bradley McDougald, I mean, I think he's still got some use to the team.
I think
it's also a fun guy. We all know that.
It's someone's job. So I think it's trying to add an element of like, hey, I recognize I'm talking about someone's job, and so I'm just going to add this note that like, it's not like anyone deserves to be.
For me, it's personal. It's not. The answer is no. You don't need to do that because we're here having honest conversations.
Yeah.
And this is what we honestly think. But, you know, for me, in my case, this is personal. And knowing these guys, there are certain individuals that I think are really hard to just sit there and say, KJ Wright, cut that guy. We don't need him here.
Oh, I'm not going to say it like that.
That part of it is, but it's a legitimate conversation, though. I think if you're looking to get younger and you're looking to add team speed, then having KJ Wright on the roster doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. But there is this element of leadership and his productivity that he had last year. So it makes this a really difficult decision in terms of what the Seahawks would want to do. I personally think the Seahawks keep him, but in the vein of getting younger, that's probably the decision that you make. Plus, you make 7.5 savings on your cap. Justin Britt is an 8.5 savings on your cap. Those are tough
big
decisions.
Numbers.
Big numbers and tough decisions for John Schneider.
Well, and even if we don't do it, there are people that are a little cutthroat with the assessments. Cut them. Hate them. Someone said that for the CJ ProSize free agent profile they had. They were like, cut him. I was like, they don't need. He's not under contract.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, you don't need to cut him, man.
Cut him anyway.
Cut him.
Do you think that they would be upset for you if you lost your job? Did they call you?
Yeah.
They might. Yeah. They wouldn't for me.
Actually, no, they did. They did already.
No, I know that. When you got cut from the team.
Yeah. It was a dark day. It was a dark, gloomy
way
day.
Way to bring it up, Tom.
But I also don't think that they're sitting there in the 710 radio station. Who do we need to keep and cut? I don't think they're having those conversations.
That would be so funny if they did, though.
That would
Can
be
you imagine
pretty funny.
Bob, Dave, and Moore, like another show, just being like, all right, we're going to have a vote. Jake, what do we think?
That would be awesome.
Get him out of here.
See what they really think of us.
All right. Next here, we interviewed Jared Kelnick on the Zeke's Pizza Hotline.
We did. Sound like you said Hotline.
Hotline. Hey, how many times do you guys... We should bring back the Bob Gras and Tom, or the Bob and Gras drinking game, because he used the word confident like 50 times. He is a confident, confident fellow, and he will not be afraid to tell you about it.
No, he definitely will not. He is very...
Would that rub you the wrong way? Like, he kept saying, like, you know, in every aspect of my life, whether it's baseball or family or as a boyfriend, like, I think that's his way of saying, like, I just want to be great at everything and that's awesome. But if you're his teammate, after a while, would you be like, all right, man, we get it.
If you're not backing it up, maybe, but by all accounts, he is.
Yeah.
I think, too, like, I can't sit here and call for more attitude and fire in baseball and then pick and choose which person I want to see it
great
from.
Question or great point
yeah
that great is, point
if you want a little more fun and attitude with the Mariners, I mean I'm happy to see this, you know, ultimately with Jared Kelenic. And I love the answer that I don't have a problem with is when you talk about, you know, pressure and expectations and him very, very much coming out and saying, we didn't even need to ask the question. We had it on our show sheet to ask him this was, I know that there's expectations for me. I know that people have high expectations for me, but it's not a problem to me because ultimately I think that I can perform at a higher level than probably anyone in this town thinks.
Yeah.
So there's no pressure involved with in this situation because I put more pressure or I have higher expectations than anyone. I love hearing that.
I do too. And you know what? I've said for years that baseball needs more of that. Football needs less. If we're lucky enough to have it concentrated amongst like three or four guys in the Mariner organization, mm-hmm. let's go.
And I Brandon,
mean, bring them up, you know, one after another.
Brandon pointed out prior to the show that I think he said it was Andy McKay, maybe during the Mariners media day, said that confidence ends up helping you not mask any deficiencies that you have, but it makes it easier to grow because you aren't constantly questioning yourself, and it's so easy to do that as a player. So it's that fine line of when do I ignore feedback because I'm too confident, but then when do I just bounce right back and compartmentalize any mistakes I make?
Get out of here. I'm hitting frisbees, man.
I'm fine. It took me 8 tries. Let's do that after the show. Do we have a frisbee?
I think my favorite part was Wassel. When you laughed at Kelenic's answer about rom-coms, and he was like, you like that, don't you?
Yeah.
You like that?
Yeah.
Oh, you like that, huh?
I imagined a Kirk Cousins-esque kind of like, yeah, I watched The Longest Ride. You like that?
I was like, what?
You want some of that?
So what? The Notebook was great.
I never saw The Notebook. Not because I'm too cool for school. I just never got around to it.
Wow.
You should.
Wow,
it's a good movie.
Is it a quality film?
It is a quality film.
People made fun of it, but then everyone watched it.
No, I didn't cry, but it was moving.
I did ugly crying when you're trying to breathe in when you're crying and you're like.
Oh, no.
Oh, not sorry.
Let's see, what else we got? Oh, Taiwan Walker has signed a 1-year, $2 million deal with the Mariners. That's good. Extra arm here for the Mariners. Look, that guy was of the big three, and I'm asking Curtis and Kyle and everybody back there if you want to weigh in. We had Paxton. We had Taiwan Walker.
Danny Holson,
who basically never pitched. Who was the most? Wasn't Walker the most highly touted? Wasn't he supposed to be Doc Gooden?
He was definitely. He had the best stuff of the three.
That's what I thought. The thing was I almost said Paxton Lynch, with James Paxton, is that he was lefty. And so with him being as tall as he was, being a lefty, it was just a little bit more rare, I guess, to have that kind of guy. But, man, Taiwan Walker, bringing in him and guys like Carlos Gonzalez, we'll see what that amounts to. But I guess good for him for still being in the major leagues. We're back in a second with more on Major League Baseball rule changes, some weird ones. Stick with us. 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Rost.
All right, I said we were going to go through some Major League Baseball rule changes. These are not the wacky changes that we got the other day that are going to, like, you know, have the top team, the second best team picking its opponent for the playoffs. These are more.
Well, they're not proposals. They're going to be.
These are going to happen. And they're more.
Game.
But they're practical.
In-game practical changes.
Yeah. So why don't, Stacy, since you're a better reader than me, why don't you go through the three batter minimum?
The three batter minimum. The official baseball rules have been amended to require that the starting or any relief pitcher to pitch to a minimum of three batters, including the batter then at bat or any substitute batter, until such batters are put out or reach base, or until the offensive team is put out. Does that make sense?
The description of put out, I don't understand quite, but why they're using that way to explain it. But
Curtis,
basically, they're just saying out, correct?
Yeah.
Until they're out.
Do you want to explain this one?
Let's see here. The three batter minimum.
Yeah.
So if the pitcher's brought in at the beginning of the inning or in the middle of the inning, they have to face three batters. If they are brought in to face the final batter of the inning, then they don't have to come back in and face two more batters.
What if you're brought in with one out? Then you're only and you get. Oh, I see. So you face a minimum of three batters, but it doesn't have to do. necessarily with the number of outs you get, unless you end the inning.
Yes. Correct. If you end the inning, you're not required
to come back out.
Yeah.
But if they bring you in, let's say in the sixth inning.
With one out.
You can't just go lefty, righty every single batter.
Yes.
That's what it's preventing against. Or that's what it's guarding against.
Yeah, and there are more rules that we're going to touch on here that also guard against, you know, changing your pitchers every batter or so. There's a 13-pitcher limit, which we've seen in years past. Teams carry 14, 15 pitchers at a time just for those specific purposes of, you know, playing those matchups late in the game.
So, like Curtis said, there's some new roster limit rules. One is that rosters through August 31st and the postseason shall be increased from 25 to 26 players.
Okay.
And in addition, clubs will be permitted to carry a maximum of 13 pitchers.
That's what Curtis was just saying there. All right, that's through August 31st, fine.
Yes. Changes to September rosters from September 1st. Through the end of the championship season, all clubs must carry 28 players on the active roster, and they're permitted to carry a maximum of 14 pitchers during this period.
Why don't we skip down to the reduction in challenge time?
Okay. So now managers will have up to 20 seconds to challenge a play instead of 30.
Okay. That's not something that I'm thinking is a bad idea necessarily. I'm not really sure what that accomplishes, though. 20 seconds instead of 30, I mean?
I think it's just shortening. I read it as you're trying to shorten the game in as many areas as possible and just make things faster. Yeah. And you either make a decision or you don't. Even it's only 10 seconds, so I don't know how much of an impact it has. But
why do it?
Well, most of their rule changes that they make, I always look first at, was this made to try to shorten games or to speed up the game?
Does it, though?
Yeah.
In theory.
10 seconds?
And it's still shorter.
In 10 seconds, I guess it could be the difference between the, you know, batter and pitcher throwing the first pitch and the manager, you know, challenging it just before that happens. So,
I guess, but I'd rather just look, if we're going to try to get these plays right, don't I want the manager to have enough time to decide? Or not? It's not even really the manager. It's the guy in the back who's telling him whether or not he should challenge at all.
Right. I agree.
Plays are close. That's the way it is.
Some plays are. 20 to 30 seconds doesn't really, to me, make the game go extremely faster. I think that this is one of those where it's you get a gold sticker for trying to make this faster, but it really doesn't give
much credence. That's baseball's
problem,
is it?
Right?
They're just trying to throw things at the wall for appearances purposes. Anyway.
Yeah, I don't think that one is this. I mean, I'm not as much of a baseball purist, so I think I'm more open to rule changes and rule proposals
What? Are you saying I'm a purist?
Yes.
You're more than us.
You are a purist. No, you are a purist. You're a baseball purist. Tom, you spent the end of our first segment talking about how the way we used to talk about baseball was better than the way we
do
now.
Would a baseball purist want AstroTurf? Would a baseball purist want to hack the season in half? Would a baseball purist want to shorten the game to 7 innings? I don't think so.
Yeah, because you're keeping it. Dang it. Oh, how do I fight back with this?
You can't.
They're good points.
I'm a crazy person.
Thanks, Stacey, think. Okay. Well, I do think you are the most of the three of us like a baseball purist.
I just watched it longer than you is all.
Yeah.
But I'm still, you know.
But I really don't mind.
Pen-wielding maniac.
I don't mind the 20-second to 30-second rule. Again, I'm thinking of it like get the next playoff kind of thing. It's just a way to speed up whether or not people want to decide something.
Do you like my idea for 7 innings? We wouldn't have to worry about 20 or 30 seconds.
I'm fine with 9 innings and extra innings. Yes, I am.
Because you're a purist.
No, I'm. It's not the game length. It's the number of games in a season. I'm so used to covering. I feel like baseball fans especially hate it when people talk football and try to compare the two. I'm not comparing them, but there's so much weight to every single football game, more so than in other leagues where there are much longer seasons and more games. But I wish that there was a little more attached to each baseball game. I would rather see 140 games in a season or 120 games in a season rather than 7 innings.
Yeah, nobody's really given me a good counter argument as to why. Like, they'll say, well, that's just the way baseball is played. Okay, well, why?
Yeah.
What is it about the nature of baseball that demands that we must play every team 3 or 4 games at a time as opposed to 1 or 2?
Right.
Why?
Well, the one part where Saul came on our show yesterday, and we talked about this, or he talked about it, was just saying that he enjoys the fact that baseball, there is a part of it that is surviving the marathon and kind of weeding out who are the best teams, who are the elite teams over a stretch, over a marathon.
80 games is
versus whittling it down. And that's how I
still
feel.
A marathon.
I think 100 games is still a marathon. How could it not be? I mean, that's a lot of games.
Right. Think about the amount of injuries that you probably wouldn't be sustaining if that were the case. Yeah. Like, I think it just goes back to an actual purist, Stacey, doesn't really have a good counter argument to it. And so they just keep trying to pound it down your throat. Like, No, that's not baseball.
Don't change anything
next
about
topic.
The game.
I want to change it all, baby.
Change
it. Get rid of it. Who are we spotlighting next? Is it Michael Kendrick's Day?
It is Michael Kendrick's Day.
It is. Yes, we are. We are breaking down Michael Kendrick's in our next profile.
All right, let's do it next. 710 ESPN Seattle.